And welcome back now. 2 hours of open lines for you, Friday into Saturday. Does it get any better than that? Hey, I just wanted to give you a program note. First of all, you just heard Ian Punnett on with his promo for Saturday night, and I'll be live with you on Sunday night with emerging artists as well. Some more great artistical bumper music from artists all around the country in Canada, so just stay tuned for that. And just go to their websites. We post them on Sunday night and just support them because they are dedicated, hardworking individuals. And we do that on the first Sunday of every month. And then Labor Day Monday night, we'll have a live program for you. So get ready for that too. And as a matter of fact, in just a few hours, I'm popping on a plane and I'm heading back to Los Angeles. And then I'm into my schedule of speaking engagements. I'm going to New York at our affiliate WOR for a couple days, the end of September. Speaking engagements in San Leandro at the Queen. I'm going to be all over the place coming back to St. Louis. And then we're into Thanksgiving and Christmas. I can't believe it. It's going by way too fast. But I've got to tell you this story before we go to open lines. I mean, this has never happened to me. In the St. Louis area, I frequent a restaurant here quite a bit. You know, I just love the people. They're just super people, and I spend a lot of time with them hours before the show. And I've been on this diet kick for 6 months now. So I don't eat any pasta. I don't eat any bread. I don't eat any potatoes, no starchy foods at all. And, you know, it's really like a low-carb diet, and it's, you know, it's done wonders. It's, you know, I saw a picture of me months ago, and I said, you know what, I could use just a few. I'm not heavy, but I look it to me. And so I did, and it's been just a great diet. So, you know, I go to this place, and I'll have a little appetizer, and that's it. And then I'll come back and prep and head off for the cave and do the program. And that's what I've been doing when I've been in St. Louis, other than seeing friends and family. I'm sitting outside. It's a gorgeous day today in St. Louis. Absolutely gorgeous. Probably the nicest day since I've been here. I'm sitting outside with some people, and all of a sudden, one of the waiters, his name's Tony, nice guy, comes flying from the restaurant. I mean, he is flying, chasing a guy that looked like he had grabbed a purse or something, and he was taking off down the street. Tony was relentless. He didn't give up. About a block down, he catches up to the guy. He tackles him, and the guy goes down, and Tony's wrestling with him. And I'm going, man, this is going to get out of hand. He might not be able to handle this guy by himself, though he was doing a pretty good job. I don't know why. You know, I've got a concealed weapons permit. You know, I'm licensed to carry in a lot of states, not New York, not California, but I am in Missouri. I did not have it with me. But, you know, part of the art of a concealed weapon, nobody knows. But anyway, I start running down the street, and Tony's struggling with this guy. And I get to him, and we hold him down. And the people I was with, I said, you better call 911. While I was running, I said, you know, get the cops out here. So we're holding this guy down. His knapsack apparently was his. He did not steal that. But what he did do was he came into this restaurant, ordered a dinner, and then ran out without paying. And I mean literally ran out without paying. And Tony went chasing him. Well, we get to the point, and I'm holding this guy down with Tony, and he's screaming. And I'm saying, what the heck did you do that for? And he looked up. He's on the cement. He looked up and he said, I was hungry, man. And I shook my head and I said, you know what? All you had to do was ask. Somebody at this restaurant would have bought you dinner. There's nobody in this area that would have said no to you. They might have given you $5, but somebody would have bought you the dinner. I would have bought you a dinner. If anybody asks for dinner, they need it. And he said, well, I didn't know. Anyways, the cops came. They handcuffed the guy. They took him away. Who knows what has happened to him? But I've got to tell you, it was bizarre. But as the cop was picking the guy up, he had one of those Jim Bowie knives. Have you ever seen those? They're like 12 inches long in his, stuck in his pants, right? And it was in a you know, protective cover. And I'm going, you know what? That's dangerous. So when you go out and you help somebody, but you don't realize that you could be risking much more than that, maybe they should have just let the guy go, I guess. But, I mean, everybody thought originally that he had grabbed somebody's purse or something until they got to him. But what a bizarre moment to kick off my last night in good old St. Louis. Anyway, we'll be back with your open line calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Let's go to the phones. We'll go to Oklahoma. Tammy's there, east of the Rockies. Hey, Tammy, welcome to the program.
Hey, George, thanks a lot.
Sure.
About Stephen Hawking, you know, saying that there is no God.
No God.
God
didn't create the universe.
Physics.
Yep.
Well, you know, God speaks things into existence. What would be the most logical way to do that? The Big Bang?
If there was a Big Bang. I'm not even sure we had a Big Bang.
Yeah. And also, you know, my mom and I, we speak Bible, you know, and she was saying, well, you know, the Bible says that the one unforgivable sin is blaspheming the Holy Spirit. I wonder why that is. And God says that the Holy Spirit is the power. And I said, well, maybe the Holy Spirit is the battery that powers all life. Maybe life could not exist without the Holy Spirit. It could be the, like the, for lack of a better word, the battery.
Why do you think Hawking said what he said?
Well, I mean, I don't really know. He's a physicist and, you know, I mean, he's a scientist. I really have no idea. I mean, to me, science and religion can go together. There's a lot of things that physicists explain scientifically that does not mean that it cannot also be, you know, coincide with the Bible, what it says.
No, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And, you know, and I said last night, I think Hawking is wrong. I respect him for who he is and what he's done all his life. But in this particular case, I can't understand why somebody could look at the marvels of the universe. I mean, just look at the pictures from Hubble. And truly, you have got to say that there's some kind of power behind this.
Well, look at the bumblebee. Scientists say the bumblebee, by all rights, should not be able to fly. It does. It's a miracle.
Everything's a miracle.
It's a miracle.
You know, waking up in the morning is a miracle.
Oh, flowers, the sky. I have seen the sky the other day, four different colors of blue. It was beautiful. It was magnificent. It was a masterpiece. It was beautiful.
You know, no matter how bad one's day is, Tammy, all you got to do is just look at the marvels of this universe.
Oh, man, I'm telling you.
Just make it go away.
I see small miracles every day. I don't see the Red Sea part, but I see miracles every day.
Well, good for you. You keep spreading the word.
Thank you.
All right, absolutely. Let's go to Mason in Riverside, California. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi, Mason.
Hi, George.
Hey, what's up?
I was wondering, do you remember the famous Area 51 phone call from 1997, I think?
I sure do. This was the guy in the plane?
No. It wasn't a guy in a plane. He was calling on the ground somewhere, and he claimed he was on the run, something like that.
I've got the one from the guy on the plane who was flying above, and then he disappeared.
Okay, well, this one I'm talking about was where he calls in and the radio gets interrupted by something, and Art Bell says something like, he's never seen the satellite lost position, Earthwalk or something like that, and you've never seen that before?
No.
Do you remember anything like that?
No, not that one.
All right. Because the first one, he calls once, and he makes his claims about... He makes certain claims about, like, the government and stuff and aliens. And then the second time he calls and he says that he made it all up, right?
Yeah.
And I heard the first two. And I'm interested in hearing the third one because the third one, I've read somewhere that in the third one he calls back and says that he was forced to do and he was brainwashed, et cetera, right? So I was just wondering if you had known that or where I could get it, but I guess apparently none of them.
We'll check. But now, have you heard the one with the guy flying above Area 51?
I don't think so.
Okay, I'll play that again. I'll get back to L.A. and we'll play that again for you, just so you can hear that. I mean, and I'm wondering, that may be the one that you might be talking about, where, I mean, he calls into the program, Art was talking to him, and, I mean, it was an incredible phone call, and the guy just flew over Area 51, and we never heard from him again. Let's go to Mary in Fort Smith, Arkansas. There you go, Mary, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I wanted to tell a couple of stories about the crystal skull. Some
sure.
Crystal skulls. I'm a metaphysician for years, so I heard about them. I used to live in Miami. My friends would call me up and invite me to go see one. And probably a lot of those were the more ancient ones, quote unquote. So I never did go. So I don't know why I didn't have much interest, but I believed that the ancient ones were the only ones that really had power. Then Spirit guided me a couple of years ago, told me to take a trip to the Southwest. And I had been stewarding an ancient ear of corn that was gifted to me by somebody who fell into a cave near Sedona. You know how the Anasazis just kind of left and everything was there, preserved?
Mm-hmm.
I ended up with one of those, and that's a whole other story, but it was incredible. And I had been stewarding it for 9 years. It had incredible power. And so I kind of had a vision to go back to Sedona and give it back to the earth. But I was confused. My vision was very quick. So when I got to Sedona, I was pretty sure I was only going to be there for one day, and I wasn't sure anymore if I was supposed to give the corn back or not. So I walked into this store, New Age store, where I'd been before, that sold a lot of stones. And the man, he remembered me. I'd been in there a couple of years before. He immediately remembered me. And there was a crystal skull there, but it wasn't an old one, but it was sitting there. And I said, we started talking. I said, I'm really confused. I need some answers. And he said, well, there's a crystal skull. So I put my hand on it, and I didn't feel much. And he said, and so I'm remembering what that last man said about the eyes, because he said, no, put your hands like this. And he had me put my fingers in both of the eye sockets.
Right.
And I immediately heard, 3 days. And I thought, well, I don't know what that means. I'm not going to be here 3 days. Well, as Sedona always is, I was there 3 days, and a lot happened. But it really piqued my understanding about the power of the crystal skulls.
I wonder if it's the crystal, or there's no doubt in my mind it's drawing energy from the planet. But I'm wondering if the crystal does that. What do you think?
Yes, because, well, I'm a psychic. I mean, I've made my living at that for many years. So, but it was just the way it, the play that was happening with me, because what I was about to do was so powerful. And sometimes there's a big play of spirit, and I don't get messages easily. It's kind of like a play, if you see what I mean. It's just that crack in between the worlds that I was living in. But there was clarity there. And so something about it brought clarity where everything else and everybody else was pointing me to go back and don't stay more. And so that's what I mean. There was something about it. But can I tell you the rest of it?
And yeah, real fast. Go ahead.
Okay. Fast forward last year, 2009, during the summer solstice, you know about the mound sites.
Yes.
So I was at a gathering for the solstice at these people's house that live near the mound site in Spiro, Oklahoma. It was boiling hot that day. And so I was guided. Everybody started kind of doing different things, and I said, I'm going to go to the mound site. And nobody wanted to go with me. So I went by myself, and it was boiling hot. And I'd been there, you know, several times, and it was always a beautiful experience. But I was just ready to turn back, but something said, no, keep walking. And no one was there, and I'm walking, and all of a sudden I hear this drum beating. And I'm going, I can't believe I'm hearing a drum beating at this site, because it's not very conscious, the people there. Well, I found these people up on a hill on the mound site, and then I looked down, and they looked at me like, where did you come from? And I looked down, and she had a blanket thing spread with 12 crystal skulls.
How about that? Were they small ones?
They were the small ones, and they were different, George. And again, you were talking, that man was talking about, or someone was talking about, asking about the different, mm-hmm. and they were all different, carved from different kind of things. There was the, and what happened was all of a sudden, she said, go ahead, touch them. All of a sudden, I was imbued with total clarity when I touched each one as to what it was for. And I don't think she even knew.
Probably not. Let me ask you a quick question about your psychic abilities. Have you done this since you were a little girl?
No, no. I developed it as I opened up spiritually. I've been on a spiritual path for many years, you know, 30-something, nearly 40 years.
Okay, so of all the psychic things you've done, Mary, which one thing comes to mind for you that is probably one of the most incredible things you've done?
As a psychic?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I don't know because I've given readings for years. I took a break for the last year, and I really cut it off. I've done that more than once, but because it can get very... But
I mean, have you ever told anybody, don't drive on this bridge, and they didn't, and the bridge collapsed or anything like that?
Yeah. Tonight, I had an email. Now, this is a longtime client, and she'll always confirm for me things. I predicted her baby years ago. I saw it in her arms, and she calls me once a year, and she called me the next year and said she had a baby in her arms. But anyway, she recently got a reading from me, and she said her husband was having heart trouble, but he was going to try the natural route, even though they recommended a bypass. Now, you have to understand, I'm a very natural girl. I healed myself naturally from death. So I always recommend that, but I told her, I said, I really think he needs a bypass. And she emailed me tonight and said, you're right, he's going to have a bypass.
Yeah, you got to have. Let me tell you something. Modern medicine mixed with alternative medicine and natural healing, I think the two of them together, unstoppable. And you should look at both all the time. And your recommendation was the right one. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Open lines tonight. Don't touch your dial. Well, it's time for our traditional shout out. And thank you for supporting Coast to Coast AM. Those of you listening to your favorite radio stations across North America, 540 strong. Thank you, Streamlink members, Coast Insiders, and also XM Satellite Channel 165. The various chat rooms and groups, the special folks, NighthawkZone.com, hello to you, Imaginative Worlds Into Infinity, National Radio Club, Sorcery IRC, the MySpace groups, Yahoo Chat, Northern Kentucky Paranormal Group, Above Top Secret, the SoCal UFO Meetup Group. How about the Hollywood Ghost Hunters and our friend in St. Louis, Greg the Cook? Thank you for supporting Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. So does anybody have a formula for slowing down time? Because use it. I still can't believe we're into September, into Labor Day already. I mean, this summer just zoomed by. To the phones we go again. Henry is in New York on Coast to Coast. Hey, Henry, welcome to the show.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I was listening to your show the other night. Unfortunately, I fell asleep. You're on so late when you had John Hutchinson on. And this ties in also to your show with John Cyril and George Knapp's interview with Gordon Novell a while back. He mentioned some affiliation with John Alexander. And back in the early 80s, I was working with a friend of mine who was into Tesla-type things for a number of years. And actually, I didn't even know this at the time, but I was listening to your show with Victoria Alexander on. Mm-hmm. I was clicking some links, you know, some web links, and all of a sudden pops up a picture of her husband, John, and Gordon Novell. You know, and Gordon had just mentioned a friend of mine on George Knapp's interview with him, which Gordon mentioned in group of the few people as being the epitome of physics when it comes to propulsion systems, you know, like UFO propulsion. And I said, I've seen this guy before. And I said, he came to my friend's lab in the early 80s with another guy, and they were, the other fellow claimed to have been a partner of Hutchinson. And what they were telling us was that he couldn't replicate his experiment all the time. He would have these like wire whiskers, he'd blow on it and things would change and it might work or it might not work. And they were trying to figure out how, you know, they were looking for information that might help, you know. And then also we were in contact with George Hathaway at the time, which John was connected with, you know, with related to Hutchinson. Now, the only thing I ever see on the web, you know, so I looked on the web a little bit more, and I see an interview with John Alexander, and he mentions basically this same period back in the early 80s. He says, you know, he sent some people from Sandia Labs out there, but he got there early, but the power supply blew up, nothing worked, and he doesn't ever say that he saw anything happen. I look at, and this is the kind of stuff that frustrates me, because I look at Hutchinson's some of his YouTube videos, you know, and I mean, does the guy know how to use a tripod or hold a camera? I mean, this camera always is moving around. There's always something floating. It's going in and out of focus. Something's floating in front of it. There's a few things, you know, videos with, you know, look interesting, but the, you know, it's always close up or, you know, it's not a really great shot. And I always find this stuff very skeptical. Even when you had like John Searle on, he was going to go on a tour, you know, and here's this guy, he says, oh, I made this UFO and it took off into outer space, never came back. And he's talking about mechanisms with spinning magnets, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, when you're talking about manipulating things magnetically to get propulsion effects, in a near field, you have to be operating, you know, you're talking about things propagating at the speed of light. If you're going to manipulate things, you have to be doing it pretty fast to juggle things around to get any kind of unbalanced forces or unidirectional forces to get magnetic propulsion. I can't see how spinning magnets are going to do it. And did this tour of the country ever happen? I don't think so. Did it?
I don't know about the magnets. You know, Searle impressed me when he was on the program. Hutchinson has some interesting videos, as you say, and they are jerky. They really are. Somebody said, look, I see a string behind one of them, but I don't think a string can hold up a 70-pound cannonball. Somebody somewhere has probably perfected something that we just don't know about.
Well, the only thing I was going to mention, I tried to tell you this once before, because I called in when you had Whitney Shriver on, you know, I mentioned two things to him. I brought the Philosopher's Stone and I brought this propulsion system. And he didn't discuss the propulsion system. He went right to the Philosopher's Stone. We never got discussed. But, you know, my friend who had worked out at SARA, and this is the other thing, too. I find things like back when Novell was on with John Knapp, there was a lot of talk going, George Knapp, there was a lot of talk on the web on, you know, like Above Top Secret or, you know, stuff like that. Jack Safradi was having this conflict with Gordon at the time, and he mentions this meeting out at SARA that Gordon had attended where there were investors and blah, blah, blah. And he says, and there was an employee there, which was my friend, pitching propellantless propulsion. And he says, which he had George Furmish fund with $1 million some years before. Never happened.
Never.
You know, people who are even in the mix can't get things straight. Firmage funded some other person's experiment, not my friend's, you know?
Right.
And so,
well, let me ask you, do you think that kind of propulsion system is out there somewhere, even if it's in a closet?
And I've said this before, my friend has talked to quite a few people and he gets the feeling that it isn't, that they don't, he said, in fact, there was, he, you know, Novell was talking about Ron Pandolfi. And there was another, I'm not going to mention too many names here, but my friend talked to one of the people from DIA came out and talked to him, right? And my friend threw a couple of physics questions at him. And this is a guy, he says, is going around giving lectures about some of this stuff. And he throws some basic things at him. He says the guy can't come up with, he doesn't even know what he's talking about. He doesn't have the right answer. He says, how can this be? He says, I don't understand it. You don't know the basic stuff about you know, Bio Savart law or something like that. And he does, you know, so I don't know. But what I was trying to tell you when Whitley Shriver was on, there is a methodology that you can model mathematically that predicts, it's a way of manipulating things. It's kind of like a juggling act. If you can imagine, if I said, could you play catch with yourself, you know? And the answer is very simple. Yeah, if you could take a ball and throw it and run as fast as you're throwing the ball and arrive at the place where it's going to land, you can catch it.
Well, just throw it up and just throw it straight up in the air.
Well, in essence, but it comes down to a juggling act, you know, and there's a way of manipulating. If you could do it fast enough, and this is what it comes down to, you have to have the finesse and the technology to do this. If you can manipulate things fast enough, you know how two magnets pull apart or push together?
Yeah, sure.
They're not going to go anywhere. You have balance forces. They're, you know.
All right, so what I think you're saying, though, Henry, is you're probably telling us now you don't think these people have invented any of this anti-gravity propulsion.
I tell you, I'm not a scientist. I've been in electronics, but I've been around a lot of people. I've worked with people who have been in that little club for the last, you know, 35 years, who know one another around the country. You know,
well, why are they in the club?
Because they're all involved in Tesla type things and in, you know, bizarre fringe experiments, and they talk to one another. And like I said, that day I came, I told you I was out on another show. I said I was out in California. I met two guys. They were going out to, they knew Pat Flanagan, right? And they had one of his little devices, and they were going to a little a meeting on psychotronic warfare. Right. I come back to the East Coast. I meet somebody with the same device. He introduces me to this other friend of mine who I worked with. And the first person to walk in the door was Eldon Byrd, who was the Navy's point man on psychotronic warfare. And then John Alexander came in and George Hathaway and all these other people. And all the same names that get mentioned for the last 35 years, if I haven't met them, my friends know them, you know, well.
Well, see, it's also
I haven't seen anything.
Well, it's also very possible that they've developed some kind of technology and they just don't want us to know about it. And again, I got to tell you the somewhat comical story. I was at an event years ago and a guy comes up to me and he says, George, I'm going to show you something, but I want you to promise you won't tell anyone. And I'm going, God, I don't know if I can promise that. I do this radio show. And he said, please, please. I have to show you this. And I said, sure, fine. So he reaches into his pocket and he pulls out some Polaroids of something. It's this contraption that he made. And I said, what is this? And he said, it's my perpetual motion machine. And I said, it's made with toilet bowl parts. I mean, he had the plunger and all toilet bowl parts. That's it. And he said, yeah, I know. And I said, well, does it work? And he went, no, I haven't figured that out yet. So, you know, Henry, let me tell you, it's very possible that a lot of these folks have not developed what they think they have. On the other hand, some of them may have, and we just don't know about it. Let's take a few more calls here before the hour eats us up, and we'll still do this again next hour. First-time caller, Jennifer, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi, Jennifer. Welcome to the show.
Hi, George.
Hey.
I was calling to share some experiences because I'm a Reiki master and I use 33 modern crystal skulls, small ones, about palm size, and I send distance healing with them.
Why do you use 33?
Well, they're made of all different types of crystals. So I got them based on the metaphysical properties of the various crystals. Like I have rose quartz, clear quartz, smoky quartz, orange calcite, etc., you know, all different kinds.
What have you done now with them?
What I like to do with them is, in addition to using them in person in a grid when I'm working on somebody, I hold them in my hands when I send distance healing, and something really interesting happens. They throb, and I use that to discern how the energy is being received by the recipient.
Do you need to know the recipient? Does the recipient need to know you're doing this?
Yes and no. I need to have the permission if I'm sending it to somebody individually. Otherwise, I just send it to a situation without actually sending it to the individual person because there's karma involved when you send somebody healing, and you really don't want to take on karma that's not yours. So I put in the provision when I set my intention that it's only being sent to, like, there are times when I send to a situation, like I was compelled to send it to the Gulf. you know, to try to have the healing of the Gulf when the oil spill was, you know, going on. And with that, that's a different thing. You know, it's more open-ended, and it's more, you know, when you send it to a situation, you have to say, you know, if the people involved would allow it. So in some instances, if you're sending it to an individual, yes, you should have their permission. So,
good point.
Yeah. But it's pretty interesting because, you know, like I said, they'll throb really strong in the beginning, and then as it subsides and it kind of subdues, I can discern that everything's flowing. You know, because when you're working on a person, when you're in front of them, you can feel heat. You know, different practitioners have different means of discerning how the energy is going through. I see colors with my eyes closed when I'm holding my hands over the person's chakras. But when I'm sending distance, the skulls really tell me, you know, they in addition to boosting the energy I'm sending, they're helping me discern how that energy is flowing.
Keep sending the energy, Jennifer. People need it. Let's go to Mike in Wisconsin. Hey, Mike, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi, all's well.
I just wanted to run a couple things past you.
All right.
With the guy at the restaurant there, when you and the cook we tackled him.
Held him down, yeah.
Yeah, he's a pretty desperate cat, and it takes, you know, a desperate cat to do that. I was wondering, how could the Coast to Coast family adopt and help him? Like, maybe he needs a gig, a job.
Well, I want to find out a little bit more about him. The 12-inch Jim Bowie knife was a little disheartening, to be sure.
We could have lost you.
Yeah. Well,
that'd been terrible.
I guess so. It would have been.
But maybe.
Was our way to go, but I want to find out about it because I mean everybody felt sorry for him after the fact when we, you know, when he said I was hungry. I mean,
sure.
My God, I think the entire restaurant would have contributed and bought the guy a dinner, but
sure.
You know, nobody knew that. They saw this guy running down the street, running out of this restaurant, being chased by a waiter with a knapsack or a purse. It looked like he had stolen it. Even the cops. Even the cops didn't know what to do with him. You know,
sure.
they took him away. But it's a sad story. I'll get some more information on who he is.
Well, sure, and he's probably in jail and pretty easy to track down.
Yeah, and you know it's going to be the Labor Day weekend, so nobody's going to go get him out.
Right, but maybe somebody in that restaurant owned a construction company can hook this guy up with like a drywalling job or something. You know what I mean?
We got to find out who he is, what he did.
What other issues he might have.
I got to tell you, he seemed a little out of it.
Sure.
And I don't know if that was the stress of what happened to him or what, but I mean, he seemed like he was out in another world.
I'll tell you, if you can figure out a way to set up like a get a leg up fund where we can help cats that need a little bit of a leg up, you know what I mean? I'll gladly send $5 and I bet you most of your listeners probably would too, just to help
another cat out. Mike, there are so many people like him in this country right now and in Canada. It's absolutely staggering. It's sad, isn't it?
And there's going to be a lot more of them, too. And maybe, you know, if we hear about guys like this that, you know, this cat could really use a leg up, we nominate him. Say, you know what, I heard of a cat over here that could use a leg up, George. What do you think? And maybe, you know, this little fund could be used to get these guys treatment. Maybe he's got alcohol problems or something.
Maybe. Do you give money to people that you see holding these little signs at the corner of a road or something?
You know, I've been in that situation, and I do, because I've had a lot of people give me a leg up, and so it's kind of that whole pay it forward thing, you know?
I do, too.
Yeah.
And what really is tough is when you're parked next to them, you know, you're at a light, and
sure.
They're just, like, looking at you, you know, this puppy dog look, and it's tough. It's not easy.
You don't know what they're going to, are they going to use it to get a leg up, or are they going to use it on just more bad habits to keep
stuff.
Them down?
Yeah. Good point. And see, that is what hurts so many of them. I'm sure there's some legitimate people out there who are, you know, they're tough luck and they're out there and they need help. But so everybody, I bet everybody thinks they're winos or they're drug addicts and they're going to squander the money. Everybody.
Not all of them are like that.
No, I agree. But I'm saying, I bet almost everybody thinks that.
Yeah, you're right. You're probably right.
You know,
If there was a way we could just nominate, like, look, I know this dude, if he just had a helping hand, I know he would appreciate it and use it and do good, and he would be able then to pay it forward, to give it to somebody else, you know?
Well, I agree. Let's find out who he is, though. Let's find out. Let's make sure he doesn't have some wrap, you know, all the way down his arm, if you know what I mean.
If he does, he probably needs the help more than the guy that's, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
At any rate, George, I'm glad it all worked out and that you didn't get hurt. And maybe we can do something to help this cat out.
Strange story. I got to tell you, I haven't gone through that. You know, I've been in the Navy 9 years, never saw combat. I always tell people that. I don't want you to think I'm some kind of war hero. Not at all. And I was 1 year, though, from getting my lieutenant commander stripes. That one I will tell you. And I just got out. 9 years was just enough for me. And I have never in my life seen what I saw today. You know, not that I've lived a sheltered life by any means, but this one was strange. I've covered stories. I've covered murders. I've covered accidents. I've covered places where they've hauled people out of burning buildings and they were dead. I've seen all that in my life, but this was just weird. The way he was running down the sidewalk, holding this thing, and the waiters chasing him with his apron flapping in the wind, and me following them. It was just a weird, weird situation. We don't have time for calls yet, but I do want to tell you a little bit about what you can expect for the rest of the week, and then we're going to come back with another hour of full open lines for you right here on Coast to Coast. So you callers in Nashville, Washington, Fort Myers, out there in Missouri and California, don't hang up. You'll lose your place in line. But as I mentioned, Ian punted on Saturday. I'll be on Sunday with an incredible story with Dr. Joyce Pugh about the Mayans and the Holy Grail, King Arthur, kind of fun stuff. Monday, split program. Lauren Coleman joins us for a couple hours on cryptozoology along with Craig Hewlett later on in the program talking about GPS and body scanners. Special program on Tuesday. On Wednesday, Julian Cribb joins us as we talk about what could be a worldwide famine, and then followed by Yvonne Smith as we talk about abductions and close encounters. And then we're back to open lines again on Coast to Coast AM. Back in a moment with more of your calls.